Tantor Audio, a division of Recorded Books, presents Just Tell Me What to Say, Sensible Tips and Scripts for Perplexed Parents by Betsy Brown Braun. Narrated by Lisa Larson. Introduction. Betsy, please just tell me what to say. Over the past 37 years, I've heard this plea from parents countless times, whether during a parenting group, an individual consultation, or a desperate phone call. It's the bottom line. Parents want real, hands-on, just give it to me straight, can't you see I'm floundering here, help. But it doesn't start out that way. When children are but a twinkle in your eye, your dreams of parenting are visions of snuggles, hugs and kisses, a toddler's first step, pony rides, learning to ride a two-wheeler, and lively family discussions around the kitchen table. And life with real-life children brings all of that and more. What an incredible journey raising children is. Before you know it, you look back on your children's growth years and wonder where the time went. But when you're in the middle of it, especially when your children are 2 to 6 years old, the age range that is the subject of this book, it's a whole different story. When my husband and I were raising our triplets, two boys and a girl, now adults, I needed help. Yes, I had been a teacher, the director of a preschool, and a child development specialist, and I thought I was supposed to know how to do it all. But knowing the theory is much different from actually raising your own children, the ones who don't go home at 3 p.m. I needed someone who could answer my questions and help me navigate this territory. I wanted someone who would just tell me what to say and do. Being a parent is physically exhausting, especially at first. It is also psychically demanding, especially for the first 18 years. It's not as if your baby arrives with a little direction booklet dangling from his big toe. Keeping up, or even one step ahead, and knowing how to respond are daunting to say the least. As much as my husband loves our children, he used to welcome Monday mornings because his work at the office was so much less perplexing and tiring than parenting his young triplets. Parenting is a journey, a fascinating, thrilling, tremendously challenging, and gratifying journey. It is an experience that enriches your life and makes you a better you, but it's really, really hard. However, the surest way to raise a child who is healthy and on track for becoming a self-sufficient, satisfied adult human being is to get your own house in order. Emotionally healthy and together adults will head their children in the direction of becoming the same. And you can't be the parent your child needs you to be unless your own needs are being met. So take care of yourself, whether that means taking time for a walk, practicing your favorite sport, lunching with a friend, reading a book, or getting the emotional support you need from a mental health professional. Just do it. Your children will be the better because of it. Not infrequently, a parent shares with me his concern that his child isn't normal. There are those children who will be diagnosed with a specific problem, such as ADHD, Asperger's, or sensory integration dysfunction. Such a diagnosis is not a reflection on the quality of the child's parenting. Rather, issues like these are part and parcel of that child and will need to be addressed. But the vast majority of children do fall within the range of normal. I would even venture to say that there are so many variations on the theme of normal that really there is no such thing as normal. Child development experts look at the way in which most children typically develop and behave. How can you, the parent, know about most children when you have only seen one or two, and they are both yours? The stories your friends tell seldom include the problems and challenges they are having with their children. Not many people air their dirty linen, as the saying goes. The reality is that normal includes a whole lot of perplexing situations and behaviors. This book discusses how to deal with many of these issues, from whining and backtalk to your child wondering about death or where babies come from. Nowhere in this book will you hear the word easy. The easiest part of parenting is loving your child, and you don't need a book to tell you how to do that. In fact, it is that love that fuels you when you hit the bumps on the parenting pathway. This book and my practice as a child development specialist are about dealing with the bumps. Sometimes they are related to a child's behavior, and sometimes they arise from a serious event or issue. It's hard to talk about things that are difficult, such as a major illness in the family. In fact, it's harder for you than for your child, because you can appreciate what's at stake. Not so for your child. For him, every experience is one to be discussed and learned about. There's not much on the planet that's new about raising children. Kids still need to be nurtured, fed, and educated about life. They need an emotionally steady and safe home environment that is patient and accepting. They need limits, boundaries, guidance, and lessons. And your children need you, lots of you, in the form of your loving and sometimes undivided attention. They need roots and wings, as the saying goes. Giving your child all that he needs all of the time is draining, to say the least. Actually, it's not even possible. And that's a good thing. One of the two most important lessons all children need to be taught begins here. Every child must learn to delay gratification. During the first 2 years of his life, your child was the center of the universe, with his every need being met almost immediately. But a new day dawns the moment those two birthday candles are blown out. It's time for your child to take his place on the sidelines along with everyone else. Cultivating patience is one hard lesson to learn. It comes with lots of crying and whining, and is a companion to the second lesson, learning to tolerate frustration and disappointment. This is the raw stuff that tantrums are made of. It's a real parent killer. No one enjoys seeing her child feeling sad or mad, to say nothing of hearing it. Your child's ability to learn these crucial lessons depends not only on her age and development, but also on you, dear parent. In my practice, I try to be the person I needed to turn to for parenting advice when my children were young. And there is no doubt in my mind that raising children is really about raising parents. I am reminded of a parent who comes to me about her child's sleep issue. The 10-month-old still doesn't sleep through the night. I listen. I sympathize. I hear how she has tried everything. Everything except tolerating the protest. And I tell her, major problems and complications aside, your child will sleep through the night when you are ready. What is new about parenting are certain matters that must be added to the list of bumps, including terrorism and divorce, which are now much more prevalent. What's also changed is how we respond to our children. While our parents left well enough alone or swept children's questions under the rug, we know the importance of talking with our children. There are going to be many experiences that your normal child needs to slog through in order to learn and grow, and his reactions will be excruciating for you. That's where this book comes in. In these sections, you'll hear information about your child's development, as well as specific tips and scripts to help you handle a multitude of situations. From food and manners to talking with your child about serious illness, divorce, and terrorism, each chapter covers a specific topic of great concern to parents of young children. Depending upon your child and his development and needs, you can use a part or the whole script that is presented. Whether you choose to listen to the book from start to finish or dip into a particular chapter, I suggest you begin with Chapter 1, which is on communication, as it lays the groundwork for the rest of the book. Although this book is directed at parents of children 2 to 6 years old, there is information that will be helpful for parents of children both older and younger. All of this advice is tried and true, having been put to the test by the hundreds of clients I've worked with over the years. I hope you'll find it as helpful as they have. Keep this book in mind and listen to it over and over again. I am happy to be the voice you need to hear just when you need it. Chapter 1. Small talk is big talk. Communicating with your children. Remember the television cartoon specials based on Charles Schulz's Peanuts? The parents, off-screen, were represented by the sound, wah, 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 wah. You couldn't see them, but you knew they were making that droning noise. Everyone remembers that because it struck a chord. It was a powerful representation of one kind of parent-child communication. In reality, there are probably times when that wah is exactly how your child is hearing you, too. It's time for dinner, you say. Wah, wah, she hears, and does nothing. Let's clean up your toys, you suggest. Wah, she hears, and doesn't move. This day-to-day communication helps to mold the adults your children will become. In order for communication to be more than wah to make a difference, it needs to be purposeful and deliberate. As the parent, you are the mirror reflecting to your child who she is. Your communication with her directly affects her growth, development, self-image, and her behavior. Knowing that should make you want to pay attention to how you are communicating. The talk about talk. Along with love, food, and physical contact, talk is one of the ways that you nourish your children. The brain requires certain kinds of stimulation in order to develop fully. Talk is one of those kinds of stimulation. There is plenty of research evidence to support the finding that children who grow up in environments without a lot of verbal interaction are disadvantaged in their development. Young children who are encouraged to share their comments, ideas, and opinions do better in school, in their social relationships, and in life. Talking with children not only helps them to learn and grow, but also gives you a window into their souls, who they are, and what they are thinking and feeling. It is through talk with, and not at, the child that the parent-child bond is enriched and strengthened. But talk is just one of the four ways with which we communicate with children. The four types of communication. First, and obviously, there is verbal communication. Included in this is everything that comes out of your mouth, the vocabulary you use, the tone of your voice, and the decibel level with which you are expressing yourself. Next is your nonverbal language, which includes your physical proximity to the person with whom you are communicating, your body posture, your facial expression, your touch and its intensity, and the environment in which you are communicating. An often overlooked aspect of communication is listening. There are at least two players in any communication, and only one is the talker. The other is the listener. And the kind of listener you are sends a strong message in any communication with your child. Finally, there is modeling, which is quite possibly the most powerful communication of all. Modeling. You are communicating and giving your children messages through everything that you do. Your children are always watching you, noticing what you do, absorbing what you say, and taking in how you behave. Actually, you may even be communicating more to your child when you are not talking directly to her than when you are. It is in those unselfconscious moments that you give powerful cues to your child about how to be in the world. Cell phones offer a perfect example. You've just been lecturing your child about the evils of gossip. Suddenly, your cell phone rings. It's your best friend, who absolutely must tell you the latest dirt about your neighbor who has finally decided to leave her husband. Your child hears, "Oh my gosh, you've got to be kidding. She what? When? Oh no, I can't believe she would do that. Who told you that? I have to call Susan. I'll call you back." Why do parents think that their children have suddenly been struck deaf when they talk on the phone? That phone conversation just sent a pretty clear message, and your actions superseded your previous admonitions about gossip. The old adage, "Do as I say, not as I do," might be a parent's dream, but it sure isn't reality. Your children are likely to do just as you do sooner or later. You are your child's first and most powerful model. Believe it or not, many years from now, you are how your children will be. Or they might be the opposite, if they look back on what you did with disdain and disrespect. "We don't read books at the breakfast table" is not liable to work if Daddy is reading the newspaper at the table. "We treat our brother kindly" isn't going to happen when you are overheard screaming on the phone at Uncle Steve. "We treat all people respectfully" will not be learned if you berate the service person who has kept you waiting for 2 hours. Remember, your child is watching. You need to be the person you want your child to become. That takes awareness and focus. Setting up verbal communication. Unlike your other relationships, the one you have with your child doesn't really have to be built. Mother Nature took care of that. From the moment of birth, the foundation for that relationship is laid. Your infant cries. You hurry to pick her up. She's hungry. You run to feed her. You are there to meet all of her needs. As you do so, the trust between parent and infant grows. That is the beginning of communication. Building on that early connection to your child, formed in part by your verbal communication, is one of the ways you affect your child's emotions and behaviors. When your communication is meaningful and powerful, it feeds your child's trusting relationship with you and deepens your connection. Research has shown that teens who seem to stay on the straight and narrow, who have a healthy social life and achieve well in school, usually also describe their relationship with their parents as being closer than the relationship their peers have with their parents. There must be a lot of conversations going on in those homes. Tips and scripts for setting up a communication. You can increase the effectiveness of your verbal communication and improve your connection to your child by consciously setting up your communication. Of course, no one follows these tips all of the time, but implementing even one or two will make a big difference. Pay attention to the physical distance between you and your child. This will be determined in part by the child's age. Young children want to be close to their parents. A good distance for personal conversation is from 2 to 4 feet apart. Any closer than that invades what is known as personal space. Though being physically close is needed for intimacy and snuggling, invading personal space is not so good for verbal communication. So no more calling out to your child from the kitchen sink or computer. Be aware of barriers between you. Ever notice that when you are about to be reprimanded, whether by the boss or the school principal, there is always a desk between you? That barrier serves a purpose. It is a buffer zone that limits closeness and communication. When you communicate with your child, nothing should be between you. Barriers can be a coffee table, the kitchen island, the shower door, or anything that is physically drawing you away from your child. A cell phone conversation, the dinner dishes being washed, the laundry you are folding. It can also be a noise distraction, such as the television droning in the background. Clearing the path between you and your child sends a very clear message and opens a direct route for your communication. I want to talk to you, and I want you to hear me. Nothing is going to get between us. I have often started teacher trainings by having one teacher stand on a chair and the other one sit on the floor. Then I ask them to converse. That's when they begin to understand how a young child feels in the great big adult world, always straining her chin upward to make contact with the face of the teacher or parent way overhead. Not much of a connection there. Your position, too, gives a clear message. If you are sitting at the computer, typing as you talk, body facing away from the child, that conveys a message. I want to talk to you, but I am not willing to make the effort to reach you. These parents may later wonder why their teenager barely looks up from the keyboard or TV to listen or respond to them. Likewise, if you want to have a conversation with your child and not just deliver a command, it would serve you well to suggest that you sit together and chat. Why don't we sit and face each other while we have a talk? Do not demand eye contact. Believe it or not, your child really can hear you even when she is not looking into your eyes. I have a strong visual image of a parent grabbing a child's face by the jaws, pulling it forward so they are eye to eye, and demanding, "Look into my eyes when I speak to you." This demand can actually impede your child's hearing what you have to say and sabotage your communication. In order for many a child to keep looking into your eyes, she has to concentrate on doing so. It's really hard to do that and listen to what you are saying at the same time. In normal conversation, eye contact isn't constant. People look away when they are gathering a thought, because looking directly at the person is distracting. Children are no different. While they do need to learn to look a person in the eye, when a child is in a relaxed state, it is much easier to do. When the "look into my eyes" demand is part of a lesson, the focus it requires just may detract from the message you are trying to impart. Create a multi-sensory connection. All children choose to ignore their parents at some time or other. To ensure that your child has heard what you are saying, create a multi-sensory connection with her. Rather than yelling from the den, approach your child, get down on her level, and gently put one hand on her, leg, arm, or back. When you do this, you are engaging three senses. Your child hears you, she feels you, and even if just with her peripheral vision, she sees you. There is no question that the connection for communication has been made. Now, if she doesn't do as you ask, it won't be because she didn't hear you, as she may claim. The message you are communicating here is not only, "I mean what I say," but also, "I care enough about you and about this communication that I will make sure you have heard it." Encourage your child to talk, but recognize that some venues and times of day are better than others. Great chats can be had in unselfconscious moments, such as while in the car talks, when taking a walk, or during tuck-in time before bed. Tips and scripts for talking with your child. Forgo the baby voice and baby talk. All of Mother Nature's infant creatures respond to high tones or the baby voice. But very quickly, the need for that voice ends. Your toddler notices when you use one voice for adults and a different one for her. Using that baby voice says to her that she doesn't have to listen. She is not big enough to merit your regular voice. She is a baby. Using a normal voice with your toddler communicates your expectations. Treat her like a baby, and she'll act like one. For the same reasons, eliminate the baby talk once your child is a toddler. Somewhere along the line, it was decided that young children best understand words that are cutified, or are made to end in Y or IE. If you give the child the real words that she needs for communicating, she will use them. As tempting as it is to refer to spaghetti as pischetti or a bottle as a baba, don't do it. Your child stands a much better chance of improving her articulation and pronunciation when she repeatedly hears words spoken correctly. Learning big words in a context and hearing you use them teaches your child more language and better ways to express her ideas and feelings. Don't scold or correct your child for using incorrect language. If your child could pronounce the word correctly, she would. She is not trying to be incorrect, so your scolding or correcting will not help. If your child's speech is unintelligible and it is interfering with her socialization and ability to communicate her needs outside the home, consult with your pediatrician, who may refer you to a speech and language specialist. Less is more. Every parent I know talks too much, blah, blah, blah. You go on and on and on. Despite the fact that you think your child is unusually gifted and has advanced comprehension, you are training your child not to listen. She will become deaf to you. This advice especially holds true when you are saying something you need the child to hear. Perhaps it's an instruction, a request, or even a command. The more you gunk it up with words, the less likely your child will hear and do what you want. When you talk too much, you complicate the message. Your child can't possibly figure out or focus on your point. When you give your child an instruction, say it simply. Ruby, it's time to come to the table for dinner now. And not, Ruby, as I told you 10 minutes ago, now it is time for dinner. I want you to stop what you are doing, go wash your hands now, and be sure to hang the towel up properly. You might think about making a pee first so you won't have to leave the table in the middle of dinner. And if you do pee, don't forget to wash your hands again and use soap and remember to hang up that towel. Did you hear me, Ruby? Ruby tuned you out long ago. She is still playing with her Legos on the floor. Be specific. You know how easy it is to misinterpret something an adult has told you. Children have the same trouble. Set your child up to be successful by being clear and direct in your expectations for your child. If you say, "Please bring your jacket in from the car and hang it on the hook by the door," it is much less likely that the jacket will be dropped in the hallway, thereby necessitating more nagging from you. Ask questions that cannot be answered with yes, no, or single words. Invite conversation by saying, "What were some of the activities that you did at Suzanne's birthday party?" Or, "Why was the piñata your favorite?" Have neutral conversations. Most of the conversations parents tend to have with a child are about her, her day, her world. Instead, try talking about something that is not aimed at or focused on the child. Talk about something you saw and ask her what she thinks. "Today, when I was driving to the village, I saw a Dalmatian running along the side of the street, all by himself. He was running really fast. I have no idea where he came from or where he was going. What do you think?" Not only will you encourage conversation, but your child will feel valued in that you care what she thinks. Listen to your child without immediate correction or judgment. The surest way to stop a child from talking is to cut her off and be too quick to judge or correct her. Listen to all she has to say, and then ask questions that will help her to continue expressing herself. Doing this will also allow you to see the issue from your child's perspective. "What are the things that Robert does that make you so mad? I want to hear about that." Honor the feelings that your child shares with you. Consider it a gift when your child tells you how she feels. Take care not to reject the feeling. "Oh, come on. You don't really hate Matthew." Instead, receive the feeling and validate your child. "You sure do feel strongly about that. Matthew is really bugging you lately." Even a simple statement of acknowledgement may do the trick, and let your child know that she can share her feelings talk with you. "I understand how you feel." Beware of why. Very often when a child or adult asks why, she isn't really looking for an answer. She is protesting. Why is a cryptic way for the child to say, "I don't like your answer." Sometimes asking why is a stalling technique. It buys the child time before she has to do whatever was just asked of her. If you are the one asking why, it can be the word that shuts down communication. Sometimes a child has absolutely no idea why she did or said something. Your asking makes her feel inadequate in her not knowing, as if she is supposed to have an answer. There are times when even adults can't readily explain why they have done or said a particular thing. It can take insight and great self-awareness to be able to answer the why question. Not everyone has it all the time. Your tone of voice. The tone that you use.
Sample complete. Ready to continue?